This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Lynn Neary in Washington, sitting in for Neil Conan. As more and more Americans are laid off, a lot of people are turning to jobs they once might not have considered. A laid-off security manager works as a janitor. A small business owner now earns an hourly wage. A government employee takes on a job in a diner. Some think of these jobs as temporary, a way to pay the bills and get on with their lives. They usually come with a cut in pay, fewer benefits, and perhaps even a blow to self-esteem. And in a down economy, even these so-called survival jobs aren't always easy to find. Later in the hour, as the final game of the NCAA men's basketball tournament approaches, one columnist says we should pay the college players. That's on our opinion page. But first, survival jobs. Have you had to make compromises in your work life? Tell us your story. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. The email address is talk@npr.org. And you can join the conversation at our website. Just go to npr.org and then click on Talk of the Nation. Mark Cooper has firsthand experience with the survival job market. He went from being a security manager at a Fortune 500 company to working as a janitor. And he was profiled in a New York Times article about survival jobs. He joins us now from his home in Tempe, Arizona. Good to have you with us, Mark.
Thank you, Lynn. Good to be here.
So tell us what happened to you. How did you end up with this job?
Well, what occurred is back in June of last year, due to the economic reasoning and such of our nation, basically I was laid off from my position as security manager for the Western United States for a Fortune 500 company. It was very discouraging, and it was a shock, to say the least. It was totally unexpected. Afterwards, after about a month of looking around and realizing the market's a lot tougher than it used to be, I needed to find a job to make ends meet and also supply benefits for I and my wife. My wife is a breast cancer survivor. And a friend of ours who runs a small janitorial company offered me a position and offered to pay our COBRA benefits as a janitor for them.
Yeah.
And it went from there.
Now, just a couple of questions. Did you have any, did the company give you anything to tide you over until you got another job? Did you have unemployment, anything like that?
Well, as far as the severance package, there was a small 3-week severance package. But unfortunately, 3 weeks' pay does not last very long. So, no, there wasn't really much as I parted ways with that company. As far as anything else is concerned, you know, unemployment is not really a consideration. I did look at it briefly, but the state of Arizona is one of the worst in the nation for unemployment benefits. Basically, if I would have sought that route, it would not even made half my mortgage payment.
And as you mentioned, of course, you had to have health benefits. That was really key.
Yeah, extremely important. That was top priority.
So how tough was it for you to take on a job as a janitor at this point?
Well, initially, it was a little hard. I mean, first, when my friends came to me, I thought, you want me to do what? But I started thinking, you know what, there's nothing wrong with that position. There are a lot of people who spend their entire lives being such. And as I've stated in various news programs and articles since that New York Times article came out, I started thinking about it. Even prior to all this media attention, that, you know, the janitors and people who do that work, every business needs them. It is a necessity in the American business culture. Yet, of course, a lot of people don't think twice about that position. It's something that, you know, not only is my respect grown for those people who do that day in and day out for their entire lives, but it's a very, how can I say this? It's just a very, it's a great position to have, even though the pay is not that great.
Now, I understand that since that New York Times article was written, you've gotten a new job closer to what you were doing before.
That is correct. Well, basically, it had nothing to do with this media attention since the Times article came out. Due to some work I'd done months before, the company had been trying to get me onto their staff for the last, like, 5-6 months. They just didn't have any openings until about a day after that article first hit. They knew nothing about the article. They just contacted me saying, we have a position with our firm. We want you to interview for it. And one thing led to another, and I was offered a position with them, and I'm loving it. I'm in my third week now, and things are going great.
So in the end, the job that you took as a janitor, which I guess you were thinking of as a transition job, it was indeed a transition.
It was a huge transition. I figured when the friends offered it to me, it's like, this will be short term, and that was their belief too. Within a month or two, I'll be back into doing what I love to do. 9 months later, I finally get the position I'm looking for.
Did you ever worry at any point that it would hurt your chances of getting work in the security industry by taking a job like that was so different from what you had been doing before?
I thought about that, but it came to, bottom line, a job of necessity. We needed the benefits, and we needed to make more than unemployment was offering. So to me, there was no other recourse, no other options available at the time. I mean, I continued my search. I had two full-time jobs, one as a janitor and one looking for my new career position. But even though there's a possibility it may hinder my career-seeking opportunities, it was a necessity and something I do not regret at all.
You know, I would think there are some people that might feel like they have too much pride to do that. What would you say to somebody that feels like, I can't take that kind of job, I just can't do it?
I say get rid of the pride, because that's your biggest obstacle. Pride is such a deterrent to a lot of us, especially in America. This is a great country with a lot of great opportunity. But sometimes we let that go to our heads too much and think that things are below us. When you're trying to survive in our economic culture, just even if it isn't as bad as it is now, you need to realize that nothing is beneath you, and you need to do whatever it takes to make ends meet.
All right, Mark, thanks so much for joining us.
Well, thank you for your time.
Mark Cooper was profiled in a New York Times article about so-called survival jobs, and he joined us from his home in Tempe, Arizona. Michael Lowe is a reporter for the New York Times, and he's been covering the social impact of the recession, and he joins us now from his office in New York. Good to have you with us, Michael.
Good to be here, Lynn.
Let's talk about what it means to call something a survival job. What are we talking about? Just a job that is a cut in pay for somebody? How do you define that?
Yeah, I mean, it's actually a term that I wasn't familiar with until I started to talk to unemployed people. And you'll find when you're in these kind of job-seeking circles where the networking organizations and job search and networking groups and things like that, they have this whole lingo and terminology that go with it, and one of them is this survival job. And I guess I would consider it just anything that is not what you're, you know, in your sort of career search and is sort of meant to help you, tide you over. And so there was this whole debate I found. I remember I did a story about a white collar. It was basically mostly professionals, managers, upper managers group in the Chicago area, and there was this whole discussion among this group of, like, should I take a survival job for the very reason that you were just talking about with Mark? You know, could that actually hurt me in my job search, mainly from a perspective of it just takes away time. If you're working a full-time job, how are you going to find that other job? And so a lot of people try to put it off as long as they can. And then the other thing I think you mentioned early in the broadcast is that it's actually not everyone who wants a survival job, needs a survival job, can get one in this economy. Even working at Starbucks is pretty hard to get at this point.
And also, we should point out that while a job may be a survival job for one person, it's somebody's livelihood as well. It's a job that some people are doing as their regular job.
Right. Exactly. I mean, yeah, one person's survival job might very well be someone else's career. Yeah, it's just a matter of perspective.
It's a matter of if it's somebody doing a white-collar job and then has to go to maybe a lower-paying job. And that's
right.
That's the tough part for that person. They feel like it's a step down in some way.
Right, right.
How widespread would you say this phenomenon is?
Well, there isn't any kind of if you go to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, which tracks unemployment, there really isn't good data that measures this. It's obviously really hard to sort of track. I mean, one stat that I did mention in my story about survival jobs Mark Cooper was in, I talked about how about 1.7 million people are working part-time when they'd rather be working full-time, which is like a 40% jump from December 2007 when the recession began. And that stat wouldn't even include people like Mark Cooper, who was working full-time, and for all intents and purposes for the Bureau of Labor Statistics information, it seems to have been employed and off the unemployment rolls, but actually he was underemployed, which is a phenomenon that is very difficult to measure.
We are talking about jobs that people are taking or have to take in order to survive a layoff, survival jobs. Our guest is Michael Luo. He's a reporter for The New York Times. And we are taking your calls. The number is 800-989-8255. And we're going to take a call from Jennifer in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Hi, Jennifer.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good, thanks.
This topic hits close to home for me. About 4 or 5 years ago, I made a career transition. I was working in the nonprofit sector as a manager, had a college degree, and was laid off, and was an offer severance package, and had to look at some pretty hard facts in the face, and decided I would go to nursing school and actually cleaned houses for about 3 years. And in the course of that, I employed a couple of other people who were also looking for jobs. So I just had enough. I think you have to definitely put your pride under the table and just say, I've got to do what I've got to do to meet my goal. And
I was going to say, does it help in a situation like that if you really have a goal, that you're working towards something while you're doing that job that is not your chosen job?
Oh, I think so. Yeah, absolutely. And I, in the course of that, you know, I made a lot of really interesting friends and folks that I worked for. And, you know, I don't regret it at all. And now as I actually employ people in the healthcare industry, and I think that just shows a lot of gumption, I guess is the word, that somebody can do that and is willing to do that, to do what it takes to live. And sometimes in your life you're faced with those things.
Yeah. Well, Jennifer, thanks so much for your call.
Thanks.
That's a good point that Jennifer makes, that, you know, that he or she's in a situation now when other people are in trouble with jobs, and she is in a position where she can hire other people because she went through that period where she took a job that you might describe as a survival job. We're going to continue this discussion. Michael Luo is going to stay with us, and we hope you'll give us a call at 800-989-8255. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Lynn Neary in Washington. We are talking about survival jobs this hour. We're taking your calls at 800-989-8255 or send us an email. The address is talk@npr.org. My guest is Michael Luo. He's a reporter for The New York Times, and he's been covering the social impact of the recession. We're going to take a call now from Matt. Matt is calling from Grand Junction, Colorado. Hi, Matt.
Hello. Hello.
Go ahead.
Yes, hello.
Hi. Go ahead, Matt.
Yeah, I'm in Grand Junction, Colorado. Last year, I was a business owner. We were doing pretty well. And then around November, I watched about $250,000 worth of orders disappear. And by the end of the month, I had to close up shop. And right now, I am working as a mechanic. I don't mind the work. It's what I started out doing. But it's a bit frustrating because I had worked for many, many years to save the money to open my own business and put myself through school working full-time to get my business management degree, and now I'm back at square one. So.
Well, do you think of this, Matt, as a temporary situation? How are you viewing this? We were just talking to somebody who said that she took a job like that, but she had a future goal in mind, so it made it easier to do.
I mean, it is a temporary situation because I know I can eventually get back to where I was. I mean, it's going to be many years again to save money, work extra shifts, a lot of long hours just to save and save and save until I'm back to where I was. But
are you glad to have a job?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm very fortunate.
All right. Well, thanks so much for calling in, Matt.
Thank you.
All right. We want to bring another guest in now. Deborah Jacobson is the author of the book Survival Jobs, 154 Ways to Make Money While You're Pursuing Your Dreams. And she says that a survival job can come with some benefits. She joins us from the studios of WUSF in Tampa, Florida. Welcome to the program, Deborah.
Hi, thank you.
So what are the benefits of having this type of a job, Deborah?
Well, first of all, I always want to – I've been listening, and better to be underemployed than unemployed.
Right.
I would say benefits of having – taking jobs that maybe aren't what you're used to doing is you can develop some new skills, channel some new talents, meet people, interesting people, maybe in a different line of work than you're used to, can open up your whole network of being, of living, of meeting people.
Well, can you give some examples of what you mean by this can be a way to sort of think about your work life differently or discover new skills? What's a good example of that?
A good example is when you take a skill that you have. Maybe you've always had a passion to do photography. Or I met somebody recently who bakes beautiful cakes, and she decided she lost her job to parlay that into her own business of designing them and marketing them. So sometimes something that looks like a negative turns into a positive.
Now, I know that when you first wrote about this, you kind of approached it from the point of view of the fact that, like many artists and actors who are trying to pursue a career in a market that's very difficult to get a job in, that they'll have to wait on tables. We all know that as the sort of classic example of the actor waiting on tables. Is it the same thing? Are we talking about the same thing now in this kind of a job market where people are losing jobs, something that has been their career for maybe 10, 15 years, they worked up to a certain salary, certain benefits, a certain sort of prestige, and they've lost that job, and now they're being a waiter. What's the difference there?
The difference is, first of all, you're right. The lingo for survival jobs came from that, from actors, writers, artists, painters, directors who had a dream. And just when someone would say, what's your survival job? It was just, what's the way to put food on the table to make money? But because of our economy, it turns into a whole different concept, because survival job is really how am I going to pay the bills until our economy brightens and employers are again hiring. So a survival job for somebody else who's not an artist, they may take what their talents are and just redirect them and use them in another way to pay the bills. Or they may need to just take anything that they can get, like go work at a Starbucks or a Walmart. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but if you've had a different type of position, you may be taking a huge pay cut, but that is also a survival job. So when you're laid off, you need to immediately figure out a way to get employed. And there's now what's great is when I wrote the book, there weren't all these social networking groups that there are now, LinkedIn and Facebook and Twitter and all these computer sites for jobs, CareerBuilder.com, TheLadders.com for executive jobs, Monster.com. There's so many ways out there now to network. More than 35 million users are on these sites.
Right, Michael Lu, sounds like you want to get in here on the conversation.
Yeah, Lynn, we were talking about the permanence or semi-permanence of these jobs. I mean, I hate to be the bearer of bad news on this, but I actually think that some people who are working survival jobs right now and think it's a temporary thing, it might very well be that they're going to be in that for a long time. I mean, when people talk about the recession and the recovery, and some people have actually already been talking about maybe we've already hit bottom, we're already going to start. There are some signs of economic growth, but what people are talking about though is that the economy could begin expanding again, but that doesn't necessarily mean jobs are going to be coming back right away. And a lot of economists throw around the term a jobless recovery, which is actually in many ways is what we saw after the 2001 recession. There was a spate of articles back in 2004. There was actually a very famous article on the New York Times Magazine about people working survival jobs who the main guy in that story was a dot-com executive who had been out of work for a couple of years and wound up working at the Gap. It matters too, I think, certain other factors. I think it's actually a lot harder for older workers. People are 45 plus to find jobs.
Right. Some of the jobs we're talking about are jobs that require a little more physical labor than what people may have been used to. We were talking about a janitor's job earlier, or even some of these sales positions. You're going to be on your feet all day. That can be tough. So let's take a call now. We're going to go to Sally, and Sally's calling from San Francisco, California. Hi, Sally.
Hi. Thank you you so much. And I'm a 59-year-old who's been cleaning since I was laid off in the 2001. I'm one of those people who, as your previous speaker was saying, thought it would be a short-term job. And I'm actually right now cleaning those houses. And the two things, or a couple of things I want to comment on. One is I do take enormous pride in what I do. I'm living my politics. I do green, clean house cleaning. I leave a house with a lot of happy, positive energy, and my clients are always happy to see me come. I employ a Latina woman who wouldn't otherwise be working. At the same time, I have a conflicting feeling of shame, which, and where that really shows up is when I'm applying for a job, I lie about what I do. And I've been told by multiple people in human resources that if I don't do that, that my resume, which I have a master's degree in education and counseling psychology and a lot of experience, and they've told me I won't make it through the first screening of letters and resumes. So it's very difficult.
Yeah. Now, did you say you've been doing this since 2001, Sally? Did you say?
Yes, I have.
And you've been looking for work in your field since then as well?
I have.
And you just
have you tried to list it? See, I'm thinking maybe if everybody's been telling you not to list it and it hasn't worked, maybe you should list that you started your own cleaning service, that you are the CEO of your cleaning service.
I am the CEO of my cleaning service. Believe me, when you're trying to get a human resource job or in a nonprofit foundation, they don't want to know that you're over 50. They don't want to know that you've not been able to be employed. They want to know why you haven't been able to be employed for that long. I mean, I've gone through Jewish vocational services and gotten counseling there. One of my best friends is a vice president of human resources. It's a very, I take pride in it, and I talk about it in a great clarity in my community, and I don't have to swallow my pride to do this job. I take great pride in doing it, but in the traditional work environment, you're a housekeeper. You're the cleaning lady.
Yeah,
Sally, the CEO of a business.
I just want to ask you one other thing, Sally. Now, are you still looking, or are you thinking, you know what, this is it? I've started this cleaning service, and you know, maybe I'll hire a few more people and expand my cleaning service, and that will be what I do. Which way are you thinking?
Well, you're right on the money with that one, Lynn. Too, that I've talked about expanding the cleaning service, and when I hear you say that, I'm on the verge of tears. It's very heartbreaking to have to say. You know, I'm going to be paying my own health insurance the rest of my life. And right now that's over $10,000 a year.
It's tough. It's difficult, but it's
very physical. And it's also physically difficult. I go home at the end of the day and I ice my feet.
Well, I can understand that entirely. Michael, you wanted to get in.
Lynn, I mean, it was providential that this woman called when I was just saying that. I mean, this is the reality. I mean, when I did that story about survival jobs, I mean, I probably talked to more than two dozen people who are working survival jobs, and a lot of them fit into this category who are, you know, 45, 50 plus. If you look at the statistics, their average duration of unemployment is significantly longer than people younger than that age. And, you know, this isn't – I talked to – I remember a person who was a CEO during that period, like 1999, 2000 period, and then sort of steady downward track of trajectory of jobs and was wound up working at Lowe's. And there really no prospect of sort of climbing back up at that point. I mean, I think a lot of people actually in that age bracket probably are going to have to, a significant number of them are probably going to have to, accept a lower paying job and just realize that that's going to sort of get them by before they get to retirement. And, you know, there are possibilities
there
of starting over.
Retirement.
Yeah. If there is retirement. Listen, Sally, I want to thank you so much for calling in.
And thank you for your compassion and your dignity.
And good luck.
Okay, thanks.
Okay. We're going to take another call now from Joy. And Joy is calling from Lansville, Pennsylvania. Hi, Joy.
Hi.
Hi, go ahead.
Well, I have a little different situation. I'm 55, and I lost my job of 22 years. Mm-hmm. And it was in medical publishing. It all went outsourced overseas. And I have 8 survival jobs.
How many?
8. I'm fortunate, though, because my husband is in a union and he has benefits.
Right.
He works most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
They're good benefits. So I have 2 jobs at the mall. I substitute teach. I work at the Y. And my kids are of an age. My son just started college, and my daughter's in middle school, you know, the awful middle school years. And this is the first time that I've had any flexibility. I've been working since I was 18. So
this is working out for you. You're saying this is working out for you. But you have the benefits, which is key.
Yeah, I mean, I have benefits, so I'm fortunate. And believe me, I jump on another job, but it's difficult. Like one of your guests said, that I'm not going to find a job, like, tomorrow, like I had. I have to, like, roll with the punches, and I'm fortunate that I'm healthy and that I can.
All right,
so
thanks.
I'm doing it.
Thanks for calling in, Joy.
And what's great about having a few flexible jobs is that you have paychecks coming in from different sources.
And like you said, I mean, like,
good
I'm
for you.
Enjoying it. You know, if you're in the same place for 22 years, you got to make the best of it.
All right, thanks so
good
much for calling in, Joy.
All right, thank you. Bye-bye.
And I just want to remind everyone that you are listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And we're going to take a call now from Brendan. And Brendan is in St. Joseph, Michigan. Hi, Brendan.
How are you doing?
Good. Go ahead.
2 years ago, I started working for a small tree care company for a professional arborist. And over the past 2 years, I've started off as the young guy. I'm 22. So I started when I was 20 and started off being the young guy, hauling the logs, doing the, you know, the hard stuff, carrying all the big stuff for the older guys, and eventually worked my way into climbing and becoming proficient with climbing and techniques like that and felling trees. And since I was laid off about 2 months ago, I've been able to use the skills that I learned in that job for helping out my family and family friends, just doing yard work, even just little gardening stuff, but also some tree work. I've been able to use those skills.
So you're using the skills that you learned on that job. You're able to use for your survival job now. All right, that's great. Thanks for calling in, Brendan.
Thank you.
That's another good perspective. And I want to read something. Brendan said he's 22, and we have an email here from a listener also asking about those who are just coming into the market. From Caitlin, I would be curious to hear more about how recent graduates, young adults, are coping with the economic situation with these survival jobs. It seems that most are discussing the impact on those that have had full-time positions and have neglected to discuss the situation faced by those just entering the workforce. Michael Luo, what's the situation there with newcomers to the workforce?
Yeah, this is actually my colleague Steve Greenhouse actually wrote a story recently about how actually older workers and younger workers on both ends of the spectrum, I mean, older workers talking about, you know, 65 plus even, and younger workers on, you know, the 20-something new entrants into the job markets, how there's actually this battle going on right now over entry-level positions. And a lot, what's happening is a lot of older workers are actually holding on to their jobs and clogging up the system and putting off retirement and things like that, just as all these younger workers are trying to get into the job market. And the evidence actually shows that younger workers are really being pummeled in this recession. It's kind of a two sides of the of a coin. What it happens is for older workers, if you're older and you actually have a job, you're less likely to be laid off. There are different protections that you have with your seniority and things like that. But once you lose your job, it's a lot harder. And on the younger workers, a lot of them are being laid off, and there is evidence that the proportion of younger workers with jobs has dropped dramatically, much steeper rate actually than for older workers. So it is hard right now for younger workers.
And Deborah Jackson, Jacobson, what do you say to young people when you tell them that even jobs like waiting tables, which people used to rely on for backup, are getting harder to come by now?
I say, first of all, always stay positive. You need a job for yourself. It's like when someone says, oh, there's not enough women or men out there when someone's looking. You only need one. You need one job. You have to stay positive, hone in on what you have to offer, what your skills are. And I don't mean just skills on what you can do or what you learned in school, just you as a human being. You know, if you're a go-getter, if you can work with people, if you rather be behind a computer desk, who you are, what your skills are, and fine-tune it to that and really go out and get a job and not and don't worry about everybody's telling you there aren't any jobs. There, I mean, yes, there's truth to all of that, and it is true, but you can still get a job. There's employment available. Like I mentioned before, all the sites that there are people still hiring. And if you have to take some survival jobs like we're all talking about or more than one, something in the evening for a few hours and something in the morning or something on the weekend,
okay,
or help
the,
out like the tree guy said.
There's the voice of positivity, and we have to go now. Thanks so much, Deborah Jacobson.
Sure.
Deborah Jacobson is the author of the book Survival Jobs, 154 Ways to Make Money While Pursuing Your Dreams. Thanks also to New York Times reporter Michael Luo. We'll be back in a moment. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.